Are we going?
Yeah, we're on.
All right, cool. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to. I always say that super fast. It's almost like one word.
Yeah, right?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Film Hustlers.
You got it right this time.
I got it right this time. It's exciting because I keep saying it's exciting. It's not exciting that the writers' strike is happening, but it's exciting to know that the industry is. So many people are talking about the business, I think.
Yeah.
You know, you watch the news and everyone's talking about writer's strike and everyone's talking about the Screen Actors Guild. I don't know. There's something about, you know, all these people coming together to get better pay, to, you know, to make movies, to make television, which clearly is not going to go away.
Right.
It's not going to go away, right? These people are going to keep doing their thing. So just want to support them. Say, you know, we're in support of equal pay. Please figure it out. Please, SAG, don't strike, because that's going to be a problem.
If they go, then DGA follows,
if
right?
If they go, it doesn't matter. Everything doesn't comes matter. To a screeching then halt. So that's over. Like, yeah. you can't go without an actor.
The last one was 100 days, right?
Yeah, or something like that. So that was crazy. But, yeah, I just want to, you know, support them figuring out how to get back to work, because, look, a lot of people can't be out of work that long. And I kind of agree with what Nahara said last week. There are writers, producers, that are check by check.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you're
I'd
making
say most
up,
of them are.
Dude, you're making up for all of the years that you were attempting to be in this business.
Yeah.
And then you get a job. And then they pull the rug out, and just kidding, you don't have a job. And now you're like, okay, well, I've got filmmakers are like students. We have like all this student debt, right? That you're paying for over the years. Oh, I put that movie on my credit card. I put that show, I put that commercial, whatever it is. So you're still paying.
Yeah.
So I just feel for people, because I know that not everyone is like that rich writer.
Right.
Right. Most of us, most of the people on the picket line are people that need to work. So hopefully I get back to work.
And everything's temp. Like, dude, when you do a show or a film or whatever, it's temporary. It's only like a certain amount of weeks, or if you're lucky.
And now it's less. Six episodes for a limited series, 10 episodes. Like, the days of 24 episodes, they're not gone, but there's just, I mean, you can count them on your hands, right? Yeah. So, all right. So listen, if you guys listen to the show, please. Rate us, review us, text or
DM, slide into the DM.
Roll into the DM. Sorry, I'm old.
Roll into the DM. What the heck? Wait, you bored old lady? Hey, I'm gonna roll into the DM.
Slide into Davey Dave's DM. Ask him some questions.
Wait, Davey Dave's DM. What's going on? What kind of show is going on over here, Robert? You've been drinking again?
But definitely like us and give us comments, because we want to know how you guys are enjoying the show. Today we have a very special guest. Johnny Murillo. Is that right?
Johnny Murillo.
Yep. Johnny Murillo. Johnny Murillo.
Depends who I'm talking to. Sometimes it's Murillo.
Murillo. Oh, like Mario.
Speaking of retroflex, you are.
Johnny Murillo. Now, you've been in the business for 15 years. So that's not a ton of time. That means you're young.
In the business, yes. It's a second career for me.
Oh, really? But you're a young man. But you've been making movies. You've been doing lots of stuff throughout your career. But the thing that we're talking about today that seems to be on everyone's tongue is everyone's talking about Chicano Hollywood, right? Hollywood, ChicanoHollywood.com.
Chicano Hollywood.
They have a great following. They make great content. And I just reached out to Johnny one day, and we struck up conversation.
As you do.
We slid in our DMs.
We slid in the DM. I'm not a real slider, though, but I like
you rolled.
You rolled in. Yeah, I'm not. There's guys that do this. That's all they do.
Really?
But I liked your content. I liked what you stood for. So then we ended up linking up, and Johnny came out with a platform.
Yeah.
And you're taking films that already are made and TV shows, but you're doing original content.
Yes.
It's funny.
Because
I said, okay, we talked about Made in Mexico and Made in Mexico going up on Chicano Hollywood. And we did it, you know, just put it up there. Bray reached out to me because he follows Chicano Hollywood, and he said, "Hey man, how did you get your how did you do this?" And
now,
I said,
"Ben Bray directed
El Chicano. But he's one of the
a lot of WB stuff, Supergirl,
tons of stuff. He's actually He was telling me there's less than a handful of Mexican American directors in TV. They're very hard to find. He works a lot. Great guy, and I hooked him up with Johnny."
Did I tell you that this is completely separate? You know, but I'm just as I'm remembering, like on Monday, I was at the Polo Lounge and I was walking out and he was walking in, Ben Bray. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, I hadn't seen him in, God, I don't know, a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
But I couldn't, I didn't recognize him at first. So we were just looking at each other. Because, you know, Latinos look at each other, right? Like, yeah. Like you know.
Hey, you're here too.
First you say hello, right? And then you're like, wait a minute.
How did you know each other?
And then eventually, in the, you know, like RoboCop, like it came up with, oh, that's right, you're Ben Bray. But he called about Chicano Hollywood
right away, dude. He texted me and he said, "Hey, I saw your post because I posted."
Yeah.
And he said, "How do I get El Chicano up there? I want to put El Chicano."
Love El Chicano on
and,
there.
And so I gave him your info. I said, "Reach out to Johnny. He's a great guy." And what you're doing is really cool. You know what I mean? Like to start a platform for not just Latinos, but your primary, like your, it's more of like a creative space geared towards us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and
I say Chicano, right? But it's like there's those of us that are Mexican American, right? I'm Chicano, right? Yeah. My family's from Mexico. I'm from here. I'm from San Jose, right? But then there's a Chicano voice, right? And that's Guatemalan, you know, Salvadoran, whatever. We're all raised in the same barrios.
Yeah.
So to me, like I tell people, Snoop Dogg is Chicano voice because he likes Low Riders. He wears Pendletons. He eats street tacos, true. Right? So there's that. It's that West Coast vibe, but also combined with the Tejano, New Mexican, you know, they have their own little distinctions too.
Yeah.
But what we're going after and what we want, our mission is just to build underneath. You guys know, like Latinos, we have this, I think the Lopez versus Lopez show came out with an episode not too long ago where it's called the Bucket Crab, right? And we were cracking up at it because it's all about pulling, you know, people down, how they don't do that. And like, that has to stop or else we're never going to go anywhere. So we are committed to building underneath, whether it's in TV, movies, you know, writing, all that stuff, plus podcasters and, you know, a lot of artists, music artists, rappers, jazz. I mean, we're trying to build underneath because, I mean, our whole heart is that, to me, and I don't want to offend any of your, you know, anybody out there, but the
offend, Johnny, offend.
Okay, we're gonna avoid the loudest voice in Hollywood, the one that's listened to, is the Latinx voice, right? And all you Latinxers, I got respect for you. But what's happened is they became the gatekeepers, and because they're the gatekeepers, none of our stuff was getting greenlit, right? We're doing these pitch sessions, we're doing all that stuff, and we're going to these meetings. I was doing a lot, right? Nothing got greenlit because I write in the Chicano voice and it doesn't pass the check boxes, it doesn't pass the list. They have certain things that they needed to be done, and I'm like, forget it, it's not going to happen. So I knew that we had to create our own system, and that's our goal, is to create our own entertainment economic system. That, and it's not intentionally to disrupt anything, but it's basically just to build up is what our mission is. So it's Chicano, 40 to 50 million of us in the U.S. and that's what we're trying to build up, you know. So
how did you get your start
for here in the industry, for me as a whole? So I was So I was raised in San Jose, lowrider culture, the whole thing. My stepdad was, you know, he was caught up. You know, those of you know what caught up means, he was hardcore caught up. My tios, all that. So if you remember the scene in America Me when they were in prison, they say, who are those farmers over there? They call themselves, you know, I don't even like to say the word out loud, but you know, if you know what I'm talking about. Those are my tios. Those are my stepdad, right? So they're all caught up. So as a child, 70s, you know, we're raised around that stuff. You know, everybody was, you know, we were in the barrio. My older brother's a cholo. My younger brother's a cholo. You know, I wasn't a very good one, you know? So I didn't have a lowrider, right? I had a 53 Chevy pickup. That was my first car, right? We, you know, we did the whole thing. But me particularly, I did lean towards the, you know, the arts, right? There was one day where all the homies were, you know, doing the whole Indian ink thing, tatting each other up. But I was like, well, I'm afraid of needles, so that wasn't my thing. But I remember sneaking, walking backwards and going to drama practice because they put me in the school play. You know, so I had that, and I was still, I mean, I had to, it was still a thing, you know, I had to go support when we had to go, you know, throw down. Anyone from San Jose, I was Libre, we go throw down with Horseshoe and Palmas, all that, right? It was part of how we grew up. But along there, because we got caught up, my journey changed. You know, started going to church. I became a pastor. So for 23 years, I was a pastor.
Right.
A lot of inner city work. I had a lot of outreach. So most of my ministry was hitting the hoods and stuff like that. Yeah. So about 15 years ago, we just felt a direction change, and you know, to me, it was a God thing. And so we came out to Hollywood. You know, it was a series of you know, basically the economy changed in 2007 and 2008, and I had to shut down my inner city church. Yeah. No one had any money, right? They're trying to tithe in food stamps back in the day, right? So it just didn't work. So we came out to Hollywood, and I felt this was what I was supposed to do, because what changed it for me was. We had already lost everything. I had to shut the church down. I was losing my house. I was in that first wave of foreclosures, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, God, I don't know what's going on, but I got to put food on this table, right? I have three kids, my wife. So my kids were already scouted. They were scouted, so we kind of were dabbing a little bit. And I was getting emails from, it was over here, it's Alley Casting, but up there it's SF Casting, right? Casting Networks. And they were looking for background for a movie called Four Christmases with Vince Vaughn and Reese Witherspoon, right? So I'd get the emails, and they needed 400. So I'm like, oh, heck, I hear some work for a couple of days, right? So I went, and while we were in that movie, if you ever seen the movie, it's like a big airport scene. There's a whole group of us. And I saw the second she got on the table, and she's wrangling us. At the time, I didn't know what a second was. I didn't know anything about that, but I'm at the crafty table. I knew what that was, right? And she's wrangling us, and right there, I really felt this drop, and like I just felt like God was saying, this is what I'm calling you to do. Yeah. And I'm like, no way, man. I was Pentecostal. If you know what Pentecostal is, right? We preached against going to movies, right? I threw out my TV like three times, you know? So it's like, we didn't do that stuff, check the music and all that, but that's where everything switched. So, you know, long story short, we came out to Culver City. It was just different things that happened that we ended up there. We tried to find a place. It was super difficult, but some miracles happened, and next thing you know, we got a place, and I remember waking up the first morning, like, we're living in Culver City in this empty apartment. We had no furniture, no nothing. Me and my son was at Vanguard University in Costa Mesa. My two daughters were on the floor. My wife were all on the floor. I'm like, what the heck am I doing here? So it's been a long journey since, you know.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
I knew how to act. So I would do background work with Central Casting. I went to UCLA, take some of those night classes, production. Within a couple months, we got picked up by me and two buddies. We all connected, said, okay, let's stick together. Let's try to make this work, right? So these are two young guys, too. And I knew their pastor, so that's how we connected. So we got picked up by Red Fu from LMFAO. You know who he is? Barry Gordy, right? Mm-hmm. His son. So we started traveling with him, doing BTS behind the scenes. So from 6 months from being behind a pulpit in Sacramento to being at a nightclub at the XS Club in Las Vegas at 4 a.m. Like, what am I doing here? You know, it's so crazy. But the journey from there, you know, a couple of movies, a lot of work with, like, there's a company called Me Too, Better Like, BuzzFeed, Snapchat, do a lot of digital stuff, you know. So, you know, the long story short, that's what it's been like. So,
has it been everything you thought?
No, it sucked. This is hard, you know. People have no idea that, you know, this has been a tough journey.
Yeah.
I thank God we've never had, you know, empty stomachs, but there's been empty refrigerators, right? Yeah, there have been landlords knocking on the door. I have all that stuff, you know. A couple times we had to retreat out and go to Utah to my brother's for a couple months. I'd find some work in that entertainment market over there and come back. I've tried to leave 3 or 4 times, and all the time, if you've got faith, and you know, God's back.
It's hard when you have a calling, or you know you have a desire to tell stories, or you know, be in a business that speaks to you. So I understand that.
Yeah.
And how in the world did you come up with the Chicano Netflix?
That's hilarious. Oh yeah, it's funny. I know, that's what I call it, especially to describe it. So it's funny. So during, you know, COVID time, right, everything shut down. So after the first shutdown that happened in March, and then about the following January, things are still trying to get picked up again, right? So a buddy of mine, Echoes World, Jeff Reyes, he hits me up. You know, we're all indie producers, and he says, hey, can you turn these thoughts into a script, right? So they just sent me some ideas. And I said, yeah, just, you know, and I was like this, I just promise me you produce this, because, you know, I've written other stuff, but, you know, there's writers that write, and then there's writers that produce, right? I want to get something freaking out there, right? So he's like, bro, I guarantee we'll produce it. You know, micro budget, but yeah, let's do it. So that movie's called Horchata with Oat Milk. And I wrote that in January into February, right? So basic gentrification story, right? Homie gets out of prison, and then he comes back to, we filmed in Frogtown. So film, and so he's going back to his barrio, but basically it's all gentrified now, right? So it's a comedy. We had Jerry Garcia, we had Concrete, we had Duno, you know, bunch of Chicano comedians, right? So that whole production, we shot that in that March, and we were doing a dialogue meeting, right? So I'm raised from the 80s. So when I use the word gun, I say cuete. But like Concrete, he's more 90s. He used a different term. And then Dunos, who's like 20, at the time he was 21 years old, I asked him, how do you say cuete? And he called it like a bang bang or something like that. I'm like, what the heck is that, right? So we have this dialogue meeting. And while we're having this dialogue meeting, I had the script projected up. And the director's name is LV, amazing guy. He's looking at the script on the wall and he's smoking a joint. And big old puff of smoke in front of the script. I'm like, ooh, that looks cool. So I said, bro, do it again, right? Do it again. I'm going to take a picture. So I made him do it like 6 or 7 times. He was freaky. He was so high by that time, right? So I finally got the shot and I sent that to my daughter, who was a senior at Azusa Film School. And I said, check this out. I'm with Chicano Hollywood. It was just a joke. The joint, the smoke, the script, and all these homies that were there. And I said, check this out with Chicano Hollywood. So that's where it came from, just as a joke.
Well, that's cool.
So I nicknamed that whole production Chicano Hollywood. And, you know, there was all Chicanos in front and behind. You know, like I said, Guatemalan, Salvadoran, but all of us, right? Yeah. And it was a beautiful, you know, it's a micro budget, so 11-day production, right? And we're in Frogtown. We're, you know, half permitted, half not permitted, so we're hiding behind the fence, all that, right? So we're doing it our style, right? Yeah. So, and I saw how they rallied around the name. That's where it started. The makeup lady, Lizzie, she shows up with hoodies one night, and it's a Chicano Hollywood real big, and on the bottom, smaller, was horchata with oat milk, right? And LV had made these, and I saw how they just gravitated towards it, and they felt celebrated. Yeah. So right there, it was March 11th, 2021, I started the socials, I got the domains, and I started the trademark, right? And we got the trademark, right? Finally took a year, right? And $6,000 later, but we got the trademark, right? Yeah. So, and then from March to August, I just would just shout people out, right? Anybody that's Chicano, Latino, I mean, I would just, if you're doing a makeup, you're a music video, you're a grip, I don't care. I'm just going to say, you know, shout out to so-and-so, shout out to so-and-so. And then it just began to grow, right? And yeah. And people just really gravitate towards being celebrated. And I had guys like, you know, Ben Lobato, right? So Ben was a showrunner for Queen of the South, right? So he's a big dog. Abe Martinez, he was DP. We're texting earlier today. He's just off of the Cobra Kai series, right? So these guys were, you know, they're at the studio level. I'm like, you guys, right? They're at the studio level. And they're like, dude, hey, this is awesome. We finally have our own platform. One of them actually said, we finally have our own platform. Thank you for what you're doing. So because and I don't know, Chicanos, for the most part, we never felt included in this thing, you know, but we really weren't. And we were silenced, but we didn't know we were silenced, right? We just knew we weren't getting green lit. So finally, there was like a rallying saying, you know, a rallying point, like, okay, now this is us. So it grew, you know. So by August, I noticed on Instagram had like about 20, maybe 2,500 organic followers, right? And there was some big players like Ben and Ben Bray and all these guys. And it was complimentary. I loved it. And then I was connecting everything to Facebook. So when I finally thought, oh, shoot, I should just check Facebook, see how that looks. And there was like 12,000 followers there. And I'm like, oh, crap. I had no idea. But I saw all the comments on Facebook were like, why don't we have more Chicanos in sitcoms? Why don't we have more Chicanos? You know, we need more content with ours. And so Facebook to me is the audience, right? And IG is more like the players. And that's how it grew. So like now, I mean, after like a year and a half now, most of our organic flow, we have about, you know, close to 60,000 followers now.
Jeez.
99% of David, them are Chicanos, you know, and it's The basic thing is we're feeling celebrated and included and respected. And, you know, that's kind of where it came
from.
So
how does it work?
Wow.
How does it work? Cool. Like if I make a movie and I think I'd like to put it on Chicano Hollywood, how do I do that?
Oh, dude.
Is it easy?
Well, I'm always honest. I'm super honest with all, especially Familia, right? I'm like, I tell people, if they just come out with a fresh movie, I'm like, dude, exploit that thing all over the world, make your money. When you're done, come to me. Because at this point, we're not doing any MGs. Of course, no one does MGs anymore, right? So it's all ad revenue split. But because we're still growing, there's not a whole lot of, you know, money be made. So I always tell people, look, you know, if it's a brand new movie, exploit it and hit me back. Or if it's a short, run through your festivals and hit me back. You know, yeah. So I give people that like that leeway to do it. But if it's someone that's had content that's already made, like there's so many of our stories that are just in hard drives. And no one's seen them, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, look,
Robert's got about 25 of them.
I made a lot of movies that, you know, sold and then never got picked up again. But so is it a channel? Or is so it?
It's like what you said. It's a Chicano Netflix.
Oh, so you
it's
can a pick streaming stuff.
App. Oh, yeah.
And there's different genres and all that. Oh, different
genres, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Do you sign up or do you buy each movie?
So you can do, you can do all. It's all the whole technology set up for all of it, right? So you can go to iOS, Roku, all of those, right? Google, all of they just put in Chicano Hollywood and you'll see it. So right now we could do, if someone doesn't want to see commercials, they can pay a subscription of $5.99. This is the audience, right? If someone is cool with the commercials, then the ads drop in between. For filmmakers, if they want to do like a pay-per-view, we have that option too. Like there's a movie on there now. It's the only one that we have that's pay-per-view. It's called Cholo Zombies, right? Mm-hmm. That's by Peter Bollinger, and Homeboy makes like, you know, he's Chicano at heart, right? But he's from Santa Ana. And so he's given us Cholo Zombies. He's given us several other movies that are on there. Kilroy, a couple others. He loves making our stories, right? Yeah. You know, he's white on the outside, but brown on the inside, yeah. Right? So, and he's actually broken to me. I mean, no offense if anyone hears this, right? But there's some actors that he's put in his indie movies that are doing really, really well now.
Kilroy did really well on Netflix, I remember.
Exactly. So, and he's really built underneath a lot of these guys and pushed them up.
Yeah.
Right now, I think he has like, him and his partner Mark have like, I think 8 or 9 movies in Cannes Film Market.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So I had someone there and they hit me up. But, hey, you want me to do anything while I'm here? I said, yeah, go to Peter's booth and just do a shout out from there, you know? So, So movies like that. So, you know, those, and Peter told me, he said, bro, we're fine. Let's stick them on there. So we have those features on there. So at this point, it's like a showcase. So, for example, for Peter, I'm going to create so he has his own genre per se. Like, so if you have movies or anyone has their own movies, I want to make it like a showcase. So mm-hmm. you can put whatever your film company and, you know, stories by or movies by or whatever. You know, just,
well, I'm looking at it right here. It looks super cool. It looks like
it's legit.
It looks like Netflix. So I love that. The original Latin Kings of Comedy. Who is that? Scott.
That's
Scott Montoya.
Paul Rodriguez. George Lopez. That's the original one, right?
Yeah, but so, the producer is Scott Montoya. How did he get on there?
We bought that brand. So that brand belonged to Paul, and so we bought that brand from Paul.
Oh, wow,
so we
awesome.
We own the Land King's Comedy. So
that's very cool.
We own
the brand
and all that. Yeah. So we put them on tour last year, then we're got some things planned for them.
So
this year.
You've come a long way since the no furniture and sleeping on the floor.
It's been very sacrificial. Yeah. You know,
congratulations.
Like any kind of startup, right?
He's a film hustler.
Like, dude, it's a film. Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a freaking hustle.
Got 12,000 viewers. Something's wrong with how we're doing. Maybe we should put Chicano in our title.
Dude, I got podcasts. I have a genre for podcasts, so we can stick the podcast on there.
Oh, okay.
We do it sports. Like, I don't know if you guys have heard of the American Cholo, the real American Cholo.
No.
Gil's crazy, right? So he's an ex-gang member, right? Ex-Cholo, right? But he's like a hardcore journalist type of dude, right? So he has his podcast, and, you know, he gets a hard...
That's funny.
You know, he brings in like motorcycle gang members. I won't say which one, but motorcycle gang members like that, and he interviews them, and he asks the hard questions. Like, he just had a meeting with the DA of L.A., right? Ask the hard questions, that kind of stuff, right? So he just put together the American Cholo handball tournament, right? I saw him push that, and I know Gil.
Necessary, by the way. Yeah. Necessary. I mean, we need to find out who the best is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, all these dudes come out of prison, and that's what
they're great.
They have, right?
Yeah.
So I hit up Gil, and I said, bro, what's your plan for that? He goes, we did one once before COVID. We're going to do it again. I said, dude, let's shoot it.
Yeah.
Let's make it a docuseries. You know, we'll get these people, and we'll follow deep on them. So when we showed up at his event, right? So I showed up with my crew. I had a sports reporter and all this kind of stuff. And it's funny because all of us are like, okay, well, none of us ever done this before, but let's just do it, right? So I had the Ortega brothers, I had, you know, my crew, and all, we're all together. And the guys that were competing, they were so appreciative, because they're like, oh man, no one's ever done this before. Yeah. We've always been underground. They said normally when we compete, it's always just no one shows up. It's just us. So here, Gil brought out, you know, vendors, and he brought out a DJ. You know, Long Beach Carlos was doing the DJ and all this kind of stuff. So it was like a big event. There's a couple of hundred people there.
Some Modelo
at
girls.
Venice Beach. Yeah, I mean, it was crazy.
Long shorts, tight socks.
I was watching it on your live that day on
Saturday. Oh, really? Saturday. Yeah. 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 So all those homies are like, they're coming and say, bro, no one's done this. I'm like, well, dude, let's put you guys on the map. So that's like our mission, is like, how do we put spotlights on what our community is doing, you know? Yeah. So now, like, I've got to do follow-up interviews now this coming week. That's cool. The idea is to create at least, hope I can pull 4, maybe 6 episodes, stick it on our platform, and then I'll try to get it out. I'll stick it up on Film Hub. And you guys are familiar with Viewler? You have you met, connect with Viewler yet? Mm. So Viewler is another, any filmmakers out there, right? So VUULR.com. So Viewler, that sprouted after when COVID happened and they shut down the Cannes film market. A group from Singapore launched a online platform for buyers to come from all over the world, because for buyers from all over the world to purchase, because they couldn't go to film markets anymore.
Oh, wow.
So it's really sprouted. So they have close to 3,000 buyers on there. So they buy content from all over the world, TV and movies. So you can just set up your account, put your content up there, and then you're making individual deals depending on what the size of the market.
That's really smart.
I used to do that a long time ago, but then the
they
business
didn't have
changed
the internet
a
bit. Back then.
I used to shake hands with people. You know, I remember selling, like, most of my early movies, like in the late 90s. Whew, I'm old. But in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, I would make deals with Latin America. There was a company called Lida Films, Pedro Lida. And, you know, he would just make deals with you and pay you good money for your movie.
Yeah,
just,
Robert Arevalo did a lot of that,
it was
right?
Just direct. I think he still does. Robert Arevalo was a hustler.
Yeah. So what they do, they're putting their movies on that, and then you got buyers from
all over the
world. I'm
going to check that out. Yeah. Viewler.
VUULR.com.
Hey, can I ask you a question? So have you ever heard of a place called, a site called extrememusic.com?
No.
It's amazing that people don't know.
Well, we're learning good things.
We're going to hook you up with extrememusic.com. So extrememusic.com is a website that houses, God, I want to say hundreds of thousands of songs, right?
Yeah.
But it's composers that put their music, similar to what you're doing, music on this site. The only difference is that Russ Emanuel, who got bought by Sony. It's like a huge, like, big thing. There's hundreds of thousands of songs on here, all kinds of albums and composers and musicians that have their stuff up here. And if you can't afford a composer, afford an original music, you go to the site, extrememusic.com, you pick your music, you download it, you try it in your film or your project or your commercial, whatever you got, and then you make a deal with Extreme, and you license it non-exclusive so other people can use it too. We talk about it all the time because some of the songs that have been in, like, Sons of Anarchy and some of the big TV shows have ended up making, like, millions of dollars, just the one song, because they hear it on Sons and then they get it for a commercial because it's a non-exclusive. So if you hear it on a show and you can get it on Extreme, you can go use it yourself. But we use Extreme for all of the stuff we do. Have you seen our short?
The one that
beautiful dark.
Hold your review and applause. But all of that music in there was Extreme Music. Not every single piece.
Yeah. We need to tap into them too. We need to know, because I get hit up all the time about that stuff.
We've done it. I don't want to say on the podcast how much money we've paid for an entire feature of movie of music through Extreme Music, but I will say it's a fraction of the cost of using a composer. And you can also pick, like, something that feels like, you know, you're watching a really cool TV show, like, with romantic songs, and there's every kind of genre. There's horror, there's, like, we were playing the music from last week's show when I came in. That was like an orchestra. Know, so you have lots of choices. So check out extrememusic.com.
And it's easy to use. You just type in whatever word, you know what I mean, whatever you feel that you think that song is, and it just pops up, and then you just start listening.
And then the automation. There's an automation button where you can remove instruments, add instruments. Anyway, it's a great site for all of your people, for our people.
Great
check
for
out
filmmakers.
Check out extrememusic.com.
How do composers upload? They just said make an account?
I think you have to make a deal with Russ and with Sony and extrememusic.com. They've got to vet you in some way, and you've got to deliver stems and all kinds of, filmmakers. You have to deliver your work in a certain way. But so it's not as easy, I think, as... as other sites where you can just put up your stuff. I think you do have to get vetted, but I'm sure somewhere on the site there's somewhere to submit if you're a composer.
Well, I'll get the word out.
But check them out. They're terrific. Yeah. Good people.
Very good.
So, it's amazing what you're doing. I think, a lot of people listen to the show because they are filmmakers, or they have been, or they've had ideas, or they have a burning desire to tell stories. You know, I think there's a lot of things that come up for me when I started doing the podcast with these guys, because Tootie forced me to do it.
I kind of did.
He invented it. He came up with this format.
Four years ago, by the way.
Was it four years ago?
Oh, wow.
4 years ago, you told me I couldn't make a movie for $7,000.
And you didn't.
Shoot. I did it. You made it for $25,000. But still.
Tell me what that was.
But Latinos tend to have the imposter syndrome. Mm. Like, you really don't believe you're doing well. You really don't believe you're going to make it. You really don't believe it's going to happen for you. Yeah. And then when it happens for you, you still don't believe it.
So you're
constantly telling yourself that wasn't enough, mm-hmm. even though that was what you had planned, right? You set this goal for yourself as a filmmaker, and then you reach it, and then you're not happy.
Yeah.
You're so fucking
right. It's right on the money. And then it's like not enough. So there's all these things going on. Like, there's all this dysfunction in Latino filmmakers, because we're all doing it for like a certain reason, but we also feel like imposters, you know? But the crazy thing, and I think this is the thing I wanted to share the most this week, is we're overachievers. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. We're overachievers. And that's what I got out of that my journey through my past. I started to realize, I thought I was like this horrible student that didn't have a future, that couldn't really do anything right. But yet, when I look back at my life, it's like billboards of things that I did that were magical.
Yeah.
You know, that were really great. Yeah. And it was all in sort of the world of overachieving.
Yeah.
So we're overachievers, and we actually don't know it.
Yeah. But I think that fear, or that imposter syndrome, is good, because it keeps us on our toes. We don't want to sit back and rest on our laurels of what we've done, even though we don't think we did much, but we did. You know what I mean? So I think it's almost like a fighter. Like Sinatra, we talked about this last week. He said in that interview, even towards, he was old, that for 6 seconds when he's on the side of that stage, he's terrified.
Yeah, you're nervous.
And that's not a young Sinatra. That's a 70-something-year-old Sinatra getting ready.
It's a lot of stages.
That's a lot of stages. That's a lot of fear. And so when he hit that stage, though, and everything worked, it was gone.
It's a crazy.
But you got to have it. He said you got
to
have it.
It's a crazy feeling to feel that you're not enough, you know? And unfortunately, we do it all the time. I could walk tall into a room and shake someone's hand and have someone ask me, what do you do? And I could say I'm a filmmaker. But the minute I say that, all I could think about is like, oh, but my last movie sucked. Trust that you're enough, and what you've done is enough.
See how I listen to the guy now? You know what I mean? Did you just catch all that?
That's like
the fucking ending of a movie right there. Yeah, and then he walks out of the room, and you're like, okay.
Well, I think, too, like what I've noticed in my life, too, and I've taught a lot of my students as well, that, you know, my daughter asked me about a month ago, we're talking about the whole how whoever the man's in charge of Hollywood and blah, 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 right? How do they become in charge? I said, well, I'll tell you how my grandfather was a migrant worker that came across the border, so he didn't teach me anything about Hollywood. My mom worked in the canneries, and then she became a bus driver, retired as a bus driver. She didn't teach me anything about Hollywood. I'm learning this on my own now, thank God, right?
Yeah.
And I'm teaching you. I said, so we're only two generations into this. A lot of the established families have been doing this since the early part of the century, right?
Yeah.
So they have a head start. Now, if you look at, especially with Latinos, Chicanos, right, as we're growing, we are going to be, you know, and I said, look at what do you think your kids are going to do? Because, you know, even your nieces and nephews, because everyone's educated now, everyone's at a different level, right? So we're going to eventually be in those positions where we're in charge, per se, right? So, and I told them, we have to do, so we don't have that imposter syndrome as much, is recognize that what we think is, when we grow and build and do all these cool things, the extraordinary to everybody else is ordinary to us. So, you know, I remember the first time we shot, we were shooting for BTS stuff. We're like, oh my gosh, it's so cool. Look at what we're doing. You know, we're creating this up with a big hip hop star, right? Now I look back on that, that was so, you know, such a small thing. And now, you know, the last movie I bigger budget movie for my budget, your budgets are different than mine, you know, was we were in 3 months in the mountains of New Mexico, and that was a freaking pain in the butt project. But it was something that other people look at me and they like, wow, I can't believe you did that, right? That's awesome. So to them, it's extraordinary. To me, it's ordinary. So we just have to adjust ourselves knowing that, okay, we're at these new levels. I'm sitting with you guys in this really cool podcast studio and all this kind of stuff, cool, you know, all this stuff. So you guys are at a level that to me is extraordinary, but to you it's ordinary. Yeah. So what we have to do is have that inner drive to keep leading and pushing and be... you got to be, you know, and I know you guys are, you're happy where you're at. You see your achievements. You see the legacy you're building for your kids. That's freaking awesome because your kids come to work and they see this stuff versus when we went to our family's job, we didn't get, there was no come bring your kid to work.
The construction site. Yeah, I had to fucking carry buckets of dirt up the stairs and shit.
So the extraordinary is now ordinary to us.
Yeah.
What a freaking blessing that is.
Yeah. You know? No, that's exciting. I mean, look, it's a crazy thing to be in show business and to be in it long enough to realize that at some point you do have to, you know, regardless of whether you're doing a $5,000, $1,000 a day or $100,000 a day, like you have to find a way to focus on your stories that you're telling and realize where the important pacing of the movies are going to be and how it's going to entertain an audience. Yeah, like these things end up getting you to the next level as far as producing and making these, you know, making your product, because at the end of the day, there's so much product out there. You have to make sure that the things that you're making are going to impress,
so that
people click and tell their friends about it, right? So I mean, look, there's a lot of things to deal with, but the great thing about what you're doing is that you're giving people a platform, Chicanos specifically.
Mm-hmm. And what I love about it too is like, you know, I hear this a lot, like, well, we have to change the narrative and have no more Cholo movies. So I'm like, nah, man. If we're telling the story, then it's okay, because we're going to show these guys with layers. I tell a story about my little brother who was a lifer in prison. He did 23 years and so on. I'll show the layers. If someone else writes a story, then they're going to show one layer. He's an animal, right? So all those stories need to be told. Yeah. And to me, it's like we're so rich with things that connect with universal immigrants around the world, so on. So to me, I'm excited about getting our stories out there. You know, when This Fool came out on Hulu, right? Yeah. With Chris Estrada and Frankie, right? Yeah. Man, I had so many texts. Man, they stole my story. Yeah. I said, bro, we all know someone that had a primo that was in prison. Yeah. I said, that's my little brother's story. You know, they're all coming out now, right? They did 20, 30 years, so now they're all coming out. And it was sad they're coming out because of a weed violation, right? Yeah. Now weed's freaking legal. Yeah. So we all have so many stories. A lot of us have a lot of common things, you know, from the migrant working to the construction, all that. So to me, those stories need to be told by us, because we will bring in the layers that need to be the truth on it versus the old gang member, thug, you know, that kind of stuff.
They're
still
there, but there's layers to it. Show how that guy got there. Show what happened to him after, like Emilio.
Emilio is a great example. Yeah. Danny Trejo, another one.
Yeah. What happened after?
Joseph Lucero from the Mayans as well, right? Joseph was locked up with my little brother, right? They knew each other from the yard. Yeah. So all these dudes that are come out, and look what they've done with their lives now. That's freaking awesome. So we need to show that stuff, you know? Yeah, yeah. Not just the gang thing, but I'm always down for good Cholo comedy. So, yeah.
Well, Cholo comedy is very, very funny. And I think
Food's gone wild. They're killing it.
It's the type of comedy that everyone can enjoy, not just if you're Latino. Anyone can find that funny. But yeah, man. So Johnny Murillo, I just want to say it right. Thanks for coming to the show. Thanks for talking to us about your past, how you came up with Chicano Hollywood. It was very, very cool, very sweet that you sent a text to your daughter, and she loved it. And now people have a place to go put their movies. I mean, does it have to be Latino? Or No.
To me, cause the first movie I produced was all white cast. We had one black actor, but I produced it. My buddy, who's a Mexicano, he wrote it and directed it, and then the executive producer was a Mexicano, right? So it's our work, even though we're not in front of the camera, that qualifies. Oh, so cool. To me, it's like, just put it all up there.
All right, cool. Yeah. Well, check out ChicanoHollywood.com. Thanks for being here. Let's keep talking in the future. Let's bring you back. As you grow, would you come back and tell us about stuff?
Yeah,
don't get all crazy and like not come back because you're so good. All right, that was cool. That was a good show.
Download the app.
Download the app.
Yeah, the more people that download the app, the more numbers we have to leverage against, you know, for investors, for anything like that. So, please go to your app store and put in Chicano Hollywood. You'll see a little black logo, Chicano Hollywood TV, and download it. Thank you. That was so
awesome.
Thanks on IG. Follow us on IG. We have a lot going on. We have our master classes. We have live events, stuff like that.
Us on IG, too.
That's true. You guys. I mean, if you're on this podcast, you should be following us on IG.
Always a hustler.
Come on. Always a hustler.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening. Hopefully, you got something out of it. At the very least, ChicanoHollywood.com. Download the app, and I'll see you guys next week. Yeah,
there you go,
Robert.
We'll
do it again next week.
Let's do it again.
Good to see y'all.
Some tequila next week.
Dude, I almost bought some today. I got some brands that would love to come.